Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
I do want to flag this next conversation is of a sensitive nature, and I've no doubt it will prove difficult for some listeners. I'm sure they'll find it distressing, so I just want to mention that at the very start. We were talking to one caller, Donna, on the show a little earlier this week about how difficult it was for her to try to access a barring or protection order.
I was granted an interim order, which an interim order is just you're given a date. Usually it's a few months in advance of the day that you're speaking. And it's ex parte, which is that the person who you're accusing of doing these things has a right to defend themselves. So it was given an interim
order. Kind of like a date setting, really, yes. Was it? Really, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
But that protection order, there are two things. The protection order is only valid after it's served, but you have no idea of when it's going to be served. It could be served on that day. It could be served the following week. You're not told.
So you could walk out of the court today, having been granted this interim order, and
it's not enforced.
So it could take 10 days,
yes,
and in the meantime,
yes,
you could cross paths with the person.
Well, in my case, we were living
together.
House.
Yeah,
we were living in the same house.
Donna's not the only person who's experienced difficulties in trying to access the various different kind of protection orders that are there. If you feel comfortable sharing your own experience with us, you can drop us an email. It's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. We want to spend some time today trying to find out, how do you actually go about getting one of these orders, and what do they mean? Mary Louise Lynch is the founder of CC. She's with me here on Lunchtime Live today. Mary Louise, thank you for joining us in the programme. You might just explain what you do, first of all, at CC.
So CC is a collective of women survivors of intimate partner abuse, and we support women who are navigating complex legal proceedings, usually post-separation, where they are still finding either abuse continuing from the perpetrator themselves, but they're also encountering systemic abuse, where the actual systems that are there and designed to protect become a further means for abuse. So we work with women both on a one-to-one basis. We also have, you know, built a platform in order to advocate for change in those areas. And then at different levels, we sit where reform is happening and, you know, try to bring the lived experience of survivors from a grassroots perspective into those spaces.
I thought Donna really bravely shared her story with us on Tuesday here in the programme. And for people maybe listening, if you want to listen back to Donna's story, that podcast is on the Go Loud app. You can subscribe there to Lunchtime Live. But I suppose the interesting point, though, Mary Louise, you know, about Donna's experience, she's obviously not alone. A lot of other people have difficulty going through this this procedure as well, in trying to take out or trying to access some kind of interim or protection order. Can you tell us about what's actually available at the moment? Like, what can people access?
So, yeah, and again, just to say that's a big part of what we do as well as court accompaniment. So initially, somebody will reach out maybe at a point of crisis. And at that time, they might not fully understand what they have been through, but something has happened where they need protection immediately, and they might have called the guards, they might ring a domestic violence service, or they might just approach the courts themselves directly. And at that point, they will be offered either to, you know, the opportunity to apply for an interim barring order, which lasts for 8 days, or a protection order, which should last up to 3 months. And then after 3 months, there should be a hearing for a safety order, and a safety order can then be granted any time from then up to 5 years. With
so
the barring order,
just to interrupt you, yeah, Mary Louise, for a second. So is the interim order, that's always the first thing you get, is it then? Because of the period,
always
the time.
The first thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And somebody might apply for both. They might apply for, you know, an interim barring order and an interim protection order, and they might be granted, you know, the interim barring order and have to come back for a hearing in 8 days. After 8 days, they may not be granted the full barring order, but they may be granted a safety order. And so it can be a little complicated that way sometimes. Again, somebody mightn't know what they actually can apply for unless they have good advice, sound advice and support to do that. Mm-hmm. I know Women's Aid have, you know, their court accompaniment service in Dolphin House. But for so many women around Ireland, they really don't know what they're entitled to. And while the court service is extremely helpful, most people don't have legal representation at that point of crisis. They also don't know what to put down on the information sheet, how much of their history to put down there. And all of that information will be valid at the time a hearing for the full order, you know, comes to be heard. So the more information that is there, the more evidence that somebody can give at the outset, the greater the likelihood of getting the protection that they need. And listening to Donna's story, I think it's so clear to show that, you know, over time, she realised that he wasn't going to change, that it wasn't a mental health crisis that he was going through, that this was intentional behaviour. And yet she talked about so well, she explained it so well, you know, being in that situation where she's breaking the rules, she's talking about what has happened, and was not able to give the full extent of what was going on at that point where she was looking for a barring order.
Which was looking for a kind of, I suppose, not just more than a level of support, but actually crying out for help at that stage. Mary Louise, stay with me for a moment because I want to bring in Emma Jane Byrne. Emma Jane is from the Beyond Closed Doors Ireland Peer Support Group. Emma Jane, thanks a million for joining us too on the line today. Do we have any idea roughly how many people are actually looking for these kind of applications each year?
I'm not too sure, but everyone in Beyond has sought legal protection through the family courts. They're very hard to get.
It's not an easy process.
Well, what we find is when a woman seeks protection from the family court, undertakings can happen where she'll apply for an order of protection, safety or barring, and the other side, the perpetrators, solicitor will try and get her to do an undertaking. The issue with the undertaking is Gard cannot act on that. But yeah, they're very hard to get barring orders. And Donna was a woman I supported for a number of years.
Yeah, so you know that story, I suppose, inside out, yeah. Emma Jane, and how difficult that was for Donna. And I suppose even just in a kind of like a wider conversation for anybody listening to this today, it must be like at the point at which people are actually going to you at Beyond Closed Doors or going to Mary Louise and other volunteers at CC, like, at that point, even trying to get your head around the various different protection orders or emergency orders and interim and all of this that's out there, like, it's very complex. This isn't easy.
Well, even with a barring order in place, what we find within Beyond is that we still have to do risk assessments with women due to access. So intimidation, stalking, technology facilitated abuse still happens even after a barring order, a safety order or protection. So during access, a perpetrator might give a child a toy and there's a tracking device in that. So when she leaves, it doesn't end. And access, over access, if she has to do a handover at her house, that's very dangerous.
Yeah.
And because anything can escalate.
On this show, as entrepreneurs, we often talk about the courage it takes to start something from scratch. Every successful brand begins with a vision, a purpose, and someone willing to take a chance on an idea. And while every founder's journey is different, many share the same determination to overcome obstacles, innovate, and build something meaningful from the ground up. That's why I always enjoy hearing founder stories, because behind every product is a real person who has invested time, energy, and passion into building something meaningful. Walmart is helping customers discover products from thousands of small brands while giving founders opportunities to grow, reach new communities, and share the stories behind their businesses. By making it easier to discover these brands, Walmart helps connect customers with innovative products and the entrepreneurs whose passion, resilience, and creativity help bring them to market. So whether you're an entrepreneur yourself or a dream driver looking to be inspired, it's exciting to see more opportunities for small brands to be discovered. Visit walmart.com to learn more about the small brands and founder stories available in your community.
And that's one of the things, Mary Louise, that we've learned. And you know, I'm not talking about in Donna's case specifically, but I can even tell from some of the emails I've been reading over the last 48 hours that have come into us. One of the things we've learned is that, like, even when an interim order is granted, it seems bizarre that you wouldn't know when that's going to be followed up with the guards, or that, you know, you would effectively go home and maybe in some cases continue to live with that person until it's actually handed out or followed up.
There is no rhyme or reason to how this happens across the country. Personally, I have been in court with somebody on the day when they obtain an order. And, you know, the individual themselves might be in an extremely fearful position and traumatized and unable to grasp the measure of all of the little bits and pieces that are going on around them in order to make sure that order is served. So advocacy is so important to make sure that you can relay to somebody, you know, yes, there's a particular guard, that order will leave the court at a particular time. They will have the order then, and they hope to serve it at a particular time. You should hear something by tomorrow morning. And when you don't have that, somebody can leave the court and maybe be afraid to check with the court office. They might just want to get out of the building as fast as they can, you know, and not actually have all of that information. I know in CC we hear of cases where there was a backlog in Dublin where it was taking up to a month for protection orders to be served. And in the meantime, you have somebody absolutely terrified. They may be trying to obtain that order to protect children rather than just themselves. And the children have to continue to go on access, as Emma so rightly said, and there is no protection. And then, you know, the grey area of calling the guards to say, but I got an order and, well, it hasn't been served, so the perpetrator doesn't know. So technically we can't arrest him for breach. So anything that happens in the meantime, abusive text messages, stalking, following, any of those things that Emma already mentioned, they're not, you can't enforce a breach of an order because of bureaucracy. And I do think there has to be something done about centralising and streamlining, you know, the systems, that an order is still very jurisdictional. And because of, say, you know, housing crisis or seeking refuge, somebody might get a barring order. Then they might go into refuge. The barring order is associated with their home address. It's not associated with where they are now. They might have to, you know, flee to another county. Then they have to return to court in the area where they obtained, you know, they obtained it. If their address changes and that isn't amended on the court application, it might be struck out on a technicality. You know, and not to put anybody off, but we really do need to improve the system.
Yeah. But like, I mean, concern in a lot of this is for people maybe listening to previous stories, and even when Donna shared her experience, albeit from a number of years ago, and even from your own point and Emma Jane's today, Mary Louise, like if there's a scenario where you are somebody who requires for yourself or your children or any of your family an interim order, and you think that you need to go and get that, and you put the motions in place to try and do that, and that you're then told it could take a month to try and actually grant this. Like, I'm sure people are obviously at their wits' end when they're even at this stage.
Yeah, and the order may have been granted, but it's not enforceable. So you might have somebody who actually thinks they're protected, and they don't know that they aren't, until they go to pick up the phone to the guards, and there's nothing can be done. And I think across Europe and other countries, you know, we have systems that were put in place to protect victims immediately. And that is something that we can push for here. And I know that's something that Cece was very vocal on. Perpetrator out, victim stays. You know, so from that point of crisis, a perpetrator is removed and the guards can apply, or the guards, not right now they can't, but they could apply.
Gosh, if that was the case.
There's something such as an emergency barring order, which is as rare as hen's teeth in Ireland at the moment. But the guards can apply there. That decision can be made by a senior ranking guard out of court hours. It's something that can be put in place over the weekend at any time. Because again, people are relying on Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, days of court sittings. You know, where I'm in Donegal, you know, somebody might need to apply for an emergency order in Letterkenny Court, but then the hearing might be in, you know, Glenties 3 weeks later. Or, and then, you know, you can, okay, it can't be that court. Where can they be heard? Because if, say, an interim barring order only lasts for 8 days. There's so many.
God, there's so much
hurdles.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, it's you can really hear it. And maybe, Emma Jane, just from your perspective, from the Beyond Closed Doors peer support group, how do you think we could improve this system?
Well, the issue is a woman is responsible for her own risk. And when you've been sexually assaulted or physically assaulted or psychologically abused for a number of years, you're going to minimize what's happened to you because, you know, you're traumatized. So what I'd like to see is, instead of a woman having to seek protection within the family court, that it's a criminal offense. Like, we're constantly asking a woman to ascertain her risk, protect her children, and seek protection from the family court. It should be criminal. And no woman should be put in a position that when she's been strangled or weapons used against her, that it's her responsibility to go into the family court, be on front of her perpetrator, who can just give her a look and she knows the consequences. Mm. So she's actually putting her full life in the hands of a judge who mightn't have course control training. You know, the risk assessment that we do is Jane Mockton Smith's femicide timeline. Like, no woman knows her own risk. And even when she goes to the guards for coercive control, it's based on her to risk assess. So women will minimise what they've gone through, whether it's strangulation, stopping of breath. These are all criminal coercive control offences.
Do you see a scenario, Mary Louise, just finally, where we will see changes to this system, where it will be improved?
I think there has to be improvements, and I know that there is a move. I know, say, the Women's Council, in a recent report on women facing homelessness who are victims of domestic violence, the call is there to change the way we work, to perpetrator out victim stays. And I absolutely agree with Emma, you know, with Emma Jane there on the criminalisation of domestic violence, because right now it is simply unfair. And what we see is, you know, day in, day out, where somebody has to go to court to seek protection, and immediately they're met with an application for access or custody by the perpetrator. And all of a sudden their children become, you know, like stuck in the middle and can be weaponized against a mother. And we have a system that doesn't recognize the impact of domestic violence and doesn't see how children can be coercively controlled as well. And I know that we are campaigning, and there's a Irish Family Law Reform, you know, have launched a campaign, and CC is part of that, to see systemic reform in the courts where domestic violence is properly acknowledged, for, you know, adequate judicial training, where protections are meaningful. And children cannot be used as a way to extend abuse post-separation.
Do you know, I think it might be worth actually us taking a trip down to the family law court so we can maybe witness and see some of this for ourselves and actually watch and listen to what happens in the family law court for anybody that's actually going through a scenario or a situation like this. If you want to share your story, you can always drop us an email if you feel up to doing so. It's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. I should say, for anyone listening today that maybe wants to get in contact with the likes of Cece, they're in for information can be found on their website at cc.ie. Their email is info@cc, it's S-I-S-I by the way, .ie. The Women's Aid phone number, if you'd like to contact them, is 1800 341 900, and also the Sunnis helpline number is 1800 22 22 23. Mary Louise Lynch, founder of CC, Emma Jane Byrne from the Beyond Closed Doors Ireland Peer Support Group, thanks a million to you both for joining us on the programme.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.